Now, the cancer of sectarianism in the workplace was dealt with by Sam Thompson in that famous play, Over the Bridge. And when he wrote it, he felt that he would never get it put onto a stage. And he approached James Ellis, the great actor James Ellis, who was a director as well, of course. And Jimmy Ellis was prepared to put it on, but he had to move heaven and hell, really, to get it to an Ulster audience. And I think 46,000 people paid to see it. It was such an excellent play. It wouldn't have happened without Thompson or without Jimmy Ellis. And Jimmy Ellis, in later years, wrote a book about the actual putting on of the play. The play, of course, called Over the Bridge. The book is called Troubles Over the Bridge. And sadly, when Jimmy had it written, he accidentally deleted it from his blooming computer, which was amazing. But thankfully, it has been reconstructed. Jimmy sadly hasn't seen it published because it's only been published recently. But Rubina, his widow, is with me in the studio. Rubina, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Jimmy would be very proud of this book now that it is published.
Absolutely. He never stopped talking about it. It was one of the most important things. He thought it was the most important thing he'd made to cultural history of Northern Ireland. Yeah, he would have been amazed.
He was a very brave man at the time, because I've described sectarianism in the workplace as a cancer in society, and it lay at the root of a lot of the problems that came over the next 40 or the last 40 years. The playwright Sam Thompson, who was a worker in the shipyard, was prepared to say what was happening in there. And Jimmy Ellis, maybe against the advice of people even in his own street, was prepared to bring it to a wider audience.
Well, funnily enough, one of the most important people who supported it was his father. His father didn't have an amazing education, but later in life he read a lot. And one of the first things Jimmy did was take it home to his father, who read it and said, "This is our play, son. This is our play."
So eventually it did go on, and not where Jimmy was working. Jimmy had to leave the theatre he was working in to put it on somewhere else.
He had to resign from the group, yes, and then he had to start looking around any available theatres or people willing to take it on, of which there were none in Belfast. And eventually he got backing from Dublin, from Findlater's, and was put on at the Empire, but after a tremendous struggle.
How difficult a struggle was it?
Well, he had, Richie McKee was one of the ringleaders, I suppose, and he had a lot of influential jobs. I think he was the mayor and a state agent, a few other things, and the BBC. So Jimmy was really taking on all of the establishment, and, that was it. He was taking on the whole of the establishment. All the doors were closed, except eventually he got it on at the Empire by becoming a shareholder in Findlater's and putting it on at the Empire.
And were people afraid that the real story was going to be told, or were they expecting unrest among the audience when it would
be?
Well,
yes, apparently. I think Richie McKee was expecting riots, according to what Jimmy says in the book.
Because it would have sown the seeds of really the progress that's been made. Equal opportunities in the workplace are now commonplace, thankfully. And the law is very strong in all of that. And the shipyard wasn't alone in terms of discrimination. I think everyone could tell a story about the discrimination that existed back in the day. The play became hugely successful, and Jimmy did want to tell his story regarding it. The writing of the book and then the deleting of it off the computer, that broke his heart, didn't it?
Oh, he literally cried for 3 days. I couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. And it was such a scramble to get it back together again, because all that saved it was we had a hard copy with all the pencil corrections, and I had to go through it and rub out all the corrections with pencil and then make a note of them. And then we found somebody in the village to recreate it on a PDF, and then I had to go through the list and put all the corrections back in again. And as if that wasn't enough, when the new Lagan Press, I call them the new Lagan Press under James Kerr, re-emerged, Jonathan Dykes, the editor, couldn't find all the bits and pieces of the alterations. So I then had to go back to my computer and scrape out bits and pieces and piece them all together again.
Well, anyone who's interested in the history of Northern Ireland, certainly the social history of Northern Ireland, the drama that existed on stage and off stage, and most of us at some point either saw over the bridge or studied over the bridge. It has to be a stocking filler this Christmas. It's available right now, isn't
yes,
it? It's at $9.99 from Lydon Press.
Yes, and I think the interesting thing about it too is it's not just about Over the Bridge. Jimmy, the way it's constructed by Jimmy, he dots backwards and forwards in time and place and tells lots of funny stories about two budgerigars and the leg of Semper in his piano, and he goes back to his life. So it's travelling in time and in place between Belfast and Dublin and London. And he talks about places and people and times long gone that I think everybody would be loads of nostalgia and two poems and some photographs.
I only met Jimmy once, lucky enough to meet him, the same way I only met Frank Carson once.
And yes.
Both chaps I remember as being welcoming to me. They were friendly, they were engaging, and you know, when you've watched someone for so long on TV, and I would have been a Zed Cars fan as a kid, and you actually meet them in the flesh on one occasion, you really do judge them. And I have such a fond memory of meeting Frank Carson and such a fond memory of meeting Jimmy as well. What was Jimmy like to be married to? You were, of course, his second wife, but what was it like spending time with an icon?
Well, I suppose, like a lot of people say, in the end, to start with, it was quite amazing because it was like the Princess Diana factor. He could not walk down the street anywhere in the UK without being recognised. So that was a bit of a nice surprise, I suppose. It was sort of reflected fun off him. But at home, he's like everybody here knows him. I think Jimmy Nesbitt once said about Jimmy's four-day-long story. But Jimmy did tell long stories.
He could definitely tell a story. There's no doubt. I want to play this little piece of music here because there'll be people my age who will be humming it in their minds as we speak. Just a fantastic piece of music that I think Everton fans love for sure. There's no doubt about that. But anyone who grew up on Zed Cars will be a massive fan. And he was behind that desk in Zed Cars and investigating crime in Zed Cars. Was that what made him the star in England?
Yes,
that got him stopped
yes,
in the street?
Absolutely, without a doubt, yes.
And he must have been very proud of being associated with a success story like that.
Well, he was. I mean, Jimmy sort of trailblazed three times, really, because the first time was he made the decision that he was going to carry on with his Belfast accent when he went to drama school, and Tyrone Guthrie supported him in that. I know that might not sound like much now, but in those days, everybody was coming out of drama school with a Rada accent. And I remember a story he told me about arriving in Belfast, and they definitely thought he was a bit of a queer fellow with that accent.
But that was that was forward thinking, wasn't it? Everyone has their own accent now. It's almost embarrassing to see 50s and 60s films
yes.
where kids in particular are talking in a posh accent
yes.
because it's been sort of bred into them at Rada.
Yes, absolutely. No, it was. And he stuck with that. And he, as I say, was supported by Tyrone Guthrie. And then the next time he trailblazed, as Jimmy Nesbitt says on the front of the book, was with Over the Bridge. And then when he went into Zed Cars, he was at the epicentre again of what was slightly behind the time of the theatre was going on in television, because that broke a lot of barriers.
Yeah, trailblazing is absolutely the right word for that. And one of the things that impressed me, actually, because I'm such a fan of the programme, I think he was only in one episode, am I right? But he was in Only Fools and Horses, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
yes.
Did he enjoy that?
Yes, he did. Yes, that was wonderful.
Yeah, because I saw that, I've seen it many times. And he was in a number of different TV programmes, also on stage on many different occasions, the length and breadth of the land. But life wasn't always easy for Jimmy. He had his challenges as well, and sadly his son Adam was murdered in London.
Yes, he was sitting minding his own business fishing by the canal, and somebody came up to him and asked him for money, and I think Adam only had about £1 on him, and when he wouldn't give it to him, he just took out a knife and stabbed him.
It's incredible for him to have gone through that, and I know a person has been sentenced to life imprisonment for that. And he lost a son to suicide as well.
Yes, about 4 years ago, Hugo. Two sons. It was unthinkable. And of course it did torment him. I mean, the first time was absolutely shocking, and he had to go and identify Adam's body. And the second time, I suppose, in a way, Hugo and his depression and committing suicide, I think that it was even more difficult to come to terms with.
How did you manage to meet him? Because you worked in TV, didn't
you? Yes, I did. Well, apparently the first time Jimmy saw me, he saw me on the roof outside the BBC Club at Television Centre. I didn't know, but he reckoned that was love at first sight. But about 6 months later, it turned out that I went to work on Z Cars. And then there was one particular night when he was doing a midnight charity performance with at the Haymarket, and they wanted somebody to look after his uniform, and usually it would be a dresser, because the uniform's such a good replica of real life, they couldn't let it out of their sight. But nobody wanted to go and collect it at 2 a.m, and I volunteered. I had a boyfriend at the time, but I said, I'll go home, go to bed, set the alarm and come back. And he said, no, you won't, you're coming out to dinner. And that was it.
That was it. That was the beginning of the romance. How long were you with Jimmy?
45 years. Well, January coming would have been 40 years we were married.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
That is a long, long time. And you miss him greatly, like all widows do, miss a special husband.
I can't tell you, the hole he's left is unbelievable. Yes.
I have to say he's so highly respected, but you know that. He's one of Belfast's most respected sons.
Yes.
And I'm pleased, considering he wanted so much to deliver this book. He hasn't seen it. He came very close, didn't he? The information came through from the publishers very close to his death, just before his death.
It was the week he was in hospital, yes. Yeah.
But the email wasn't read until after he had passed away. That confirmation that the publication was about to happen. A trailblazer story of rebellious opposition to censorship of the arts in the 1950s. And it was censorship that was trying to, I suppose, mask, as I said at the beginning, the cancer of sectarianism in society. So anyone who feels at this moment in time that they've got a job today because there's equal rights and equal opportunities, indeed should be looking back and in many ways thanking Jimmy Ellis.
Yes, yep. He was amazing. He put what amazed me was that in 1959, when this happened, it was such a different world, and big things were happening across in America and London, England, with the Angry Young Men and Marlon Brando and James Dean, and they were people being pulled out of millions, and yet in Jimmy's case, I think the population here was only 1.4 million at the time. So for two men to take their place in such a big world from such a small part of the world, I think, is just astonishing.
Ben, it is absolutely lovely meeting you. Thanks for dropping by. And you're living in Lincolnshire now. Where are you? Where are you?
Yep. In borders of Lincolnshire, Nottinghamshire. Yes.
And over to visit us. You're very welcome to this part of the world. I'm sure you're a regular visitor. But The Troubles Over the Bridge is the book, and indeed, it's a James Nesbitt that actually used that quote. A trailblazer's story of rebellious opposition to censorship of the arts in the North in the 1950s. Troubles Over the Bridge by James Ellis, and it's available courtesy of Lagan Press. Rubina, thanks for dropping by. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rubina Ellis with us in the studio. This is U105.